This week, we step a little bit deeper into the Miracle Zone, taking on a new approach to an old subject. I am joined by special guest Louis Savory, continuing the controversial conversation on fire for weeks on the Twitter social media platform. Together, we share and analyze a piece written by Mr. Savory. I'm a racist, you might be one too. Mr. Savory is born and raised in Washington Heights, New York City. First and foremost in his life is his Christian faith. He is founder of the movement called Upstream, where the point is to spread the core values of truth, love, and courage. So now, sit back, relax, and enter into the Miracle Zone.
Transition at the end, heading into the next stage, it feels like you can't make it. It feels like all hell is breaking out against you. It feels that way because you're almost there. The birth canal is the narrowest just before delivery. It's the darkest and the coldest just before dawn. Hello, I'm Pamela Chapman. Welcome to Miracle Zone, making it reality against circumstance, logic, and economics. Appropriate for today when it often seems like a changing, chaotic, and very crazy world keeps us in difficult transition. Today is Tuesday, May 15th, and we're coming to you live from my place of miracle, the beautiful spring-like Rockies in Colorado. We have shifted once again. Thank you for allowing us to have some time out of your incredibly busy schedule to help guide you into your very own dream come true. I'll facilitate your journey into whatever you care to manifest for this time. So, whether you are transitioning through a job loss, career change, mate change, emptiness syndrome, retirement, loss of a loved one, or plain old limbo, we are here to help make that transition as easy and painless as possible. Hey, I'm super excited today. We are joined by special guest Louis Savory. We'll be chatting about I'm a racist, you might be one too. But before we begin our show, let's take a few minutes to do our spiritual exercises, right? The Miracle Zone is a spiritual podcast. So, right now, I'd like to invite you to join me in what I call a grounding exercise. And this is just an imagination exercise to go along with your prayers, your meditations, whatever you do in the morning to prepare to leave your home. I hope there's something in place. Most of the listeners here are enlightened and they do have some type of spiritual work that they're doing. So this is just in addition to. So if you're in a safe space, please do not do this if you're driving, operating equipment. You're in a safe space. I'd like to invite you to just simply back and relax and take some deep breaths with me. Just a deep breath in, inhaling. And then I'd like you to just breathe out. I like to imagine breathing in love and peace. So let's take another deep breath in all together. And exhale. And now I'd like you to imagine with me that you have a root either coming out of your 2 feet or out of the tailbone. And we're just going to use this root, this tool, as a way to help us to ground, okay? It's just an exercise I use, and it's really excellent when you're flying. It's a great tool to use when you have to fly. If you're like me, I love to travel, but I really don't like to fly. It doesn't stop me. But this exercise will ground you, and when turbulence hits, it just kind of keeps you nice and steady. So let's imagine that we have those roots, and we are seeing those roots, and they are now going down to our floor that we're either standing or sitting upon. And then we're going to see that root just push through that floor, and we're going to keep going south. And then we're going to see that root push through the ground easily, just headed south, and let it continue to go down. And remember, this is safe. And we're just going to continue to go down. And as we're going down, we are looking for that core in the earth, and we're going to look for it just to wrap that root around the core. So we just go down, down, down. We may begin to imagine some heat, imagine some magma that we're passing through, and we just see that root going down, and all we're going to do is wrap that root around that core. Now, we know there's no real ball in the middle of the earth or bar, but again, it's an imagination tool, and we just wrap the root around the core, and we just pull it nice and tight and firm, okay, until you feel yourself grounded. Okay? You might even hear a little clunk as you lock in. Okay? And I always say, no matter the news, no matter what comes, when you're grounded like this, you'll sway to the right, to the left, but you won't topple over. Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down, right? So we're nice and grounded. And so now we just begin to allow that root to bring itself back up, 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 up quickly, up through the magma, starting to feel some coolness, up through the ground, up through our floor. And now we will begin to see that root as energy and as light. It's love, it's joy, it's peace, it's everything good. And just begin to see that coming up through the root, coming up to our second chakra, keep coming up, solar plexus, our stomachs, and now see that light coming up to our hearts, and let it hang out there in our hearts just for a little bit, lighting our hearts, opening our hearts, and begin to see that light coming up to the throat, opening our throats so we can speak the truth, and on up, 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 to our third eye, pituitary gland, and on up to our crown, and we see the light. And for me, that is the light of God, the light of salvation, allowing it to light my way, to light me as I go throughout the day so that I can be a light to others as I go. And so very quickly now, I would like for us to step into our protection. And I do this, again, as an imaginary exercise just to help me as I go out. We all need a little protection. You can do this however you choose. But for those of you who need a little help, into our armor. And I call this my coat of armor, okay? And so we're going to see that armor before us, and it's impenetrable. Nothing can get through it. No lies can get through it, no hurt can get through it, no harm can get through it. And so we imagine seeing it. And so with me, imagine that you are now stepping into that armor, right foot first and then the left. And then we allow that armor to come up over us quickly, our knees, our thighs, up over our waist, our stomachs, our chest, all the way up to the bottom of our necks, up to our shoulders, and then down to the arms and our hands. We are completely protected except for our heads. Our head is still exposed. And I like to imagine a helmet. I call mine the helmet of salvation. And it is sitting on a mahogany shelf. And I see that helmet, and I reach out for that helmet, and I place it upon my head gingerly. And now everything is covered. My neck is covered. Everything is covered except my mouth, my nose, and my eyes. And my eyes allow me to see forward. My eyes allow me to see what he has for me. My direction is forward. It is impossible to look backward. My nose is exposed, and I always say to sniff out the truth, right? That's your personal truth. And then my mouth is exposed to speak the truth to those who care to listen. We don't waste our energy. We don't waste our time on those who don't. So that's it. And now I am going to introduce the audience to Mr. Louis Savory. Louis, welcome. Welcome to the Miracle Zone.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Louis, I would like for you to tell the audience a little something about Louis Savory. Who are you?
Yeah, sure. So, yes, I know you said briefly, I'm from New York City. I grew up here, and I think a good way, I guess a lot of people would describe me as someone who's always growing up. I've always been curious, seeking truth, seeing, asking questions, and I feel like that's taken me on a unique journey and where I'm at now in my life and what that all means to me. And I know you mentioned earlier, I think the primary thing that stems from all that is my Christian faith. So, you know, everything is really dictated from that, you know. So even you speaking about the armor and all that reminds me of how as Christians, we look at that, you know, shield of faith, helmet of salvation, and things like that. But nonetheless, always been on a journey to find truth, always been real curious. And I feel like where my journey is at now, where it has taken this, just giving me more ground because of my faith and my trust in Christ. And then from there, it's just an unstoppable kind of sought out, seeking for truth kind of journey. So yeah, that's a little about me. Very curious guy from New York, and I feel like, you know, that's been a roller coaster in itself, just being from New York and being a part of such a big city and things like that. But
yes, yes. Well, I don't know if I shared with you. I think I did. I was born and raised in New York, in the Bronx, in the South Bronx. And and worked in Manhattan until I actually worked on One Wall Street. So being in New York and growing up in New York, I have to tell you, Louis, you're blessed in many, many ways. You may not even realize it yet, but but it certainly is a blessing to be from the city. We pretty much met online on Twitter, and it's interesting. I've come to know so many wonderful people and get to be really good friends with some of these connections. They're not just virtual; they become real solid connections. And there was a topic that, and I say was, but still is a topic that is very hot on Twitter. A conversation has come out of the Owens West Twitter, I think it's 2 weeks ago now, maybe three weeks ago, right?
Uh-huh.
And It is opened a conversation. And so I wanted to have you speak to us about that a little bit today. And there's an awakening. There's a readiness to speak. I think for a long time, many of us have been quiet, even fearful. And there is a politically diminishing of the stereotypical myth that we as Americans or Black Americans, we all think alike. And that's been the perspective portrayed by the media forever, as long as I can remember. And I think I have a good many years on you. But what do you say about that? What do you think about this, what's happening on Twitter? Just your whole idea around that, Louis. Because today's show, let me remind the listeners again, is I'm a Racist. You might be one too. But talk to us first about this conversation that's happening, your perspective.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one of the best ways to describe it, I really think culture and politics collided. You know, it's something interesting happened because I feel like it's kind of what you mentioned. There's such a grip in culture on ideas in the Black community, but that stems down to a lot of minority groups because of the influence that culture has, you know, whether that be our music, whether that be Hollywood, whether that be the media, well, I would say especially the media, that to really be part of, in a sense, quote-unquote, fighting for justice or knowing what's going on or, you know, one of the buzzwords being woke, is really thinking, in a sense, like everyone else, you know, and I think that statement is so controversial because for so many years, many, I would say, maybe haven't realized that. They really haven't been thinking about themselves, you know, and I think this is a conversation that goes beyond being right or wrong at this point, right? That's why I call it like a culture and political collide. It's more a conversation based on free thinking. Like, you know, are you coming up with what you believe on your own? Is that your own thought, or is that something that you feel you need to subscribe to, you need to believe, you need to really be a part of in order to be accepted, you know? And then, and I think for many years, I would say, even myself, you know, it's kind of going along with the current, going along with the wave that says, okay, I have to believe this. Everybody around me believes this. So I believe it, you know, without really questioning what you really believe, you know? So, and I think the reason Kanye just tweeting out, I love the way Candace Owens thinks is so powerful, was because it literally shifted and it shifted a mindset in the community that said, what? Why would that guy say that? You know, some people straight went on the wagon of just criticizing him and doing it. But some people, even if it's just a handful, which I'm sure was way more than that because he's a global icon, but had to sit back and think, why would he say that, right? There's people who, if Kanye jumps, you know, whatever Kanye does, they do. So it's like, this is the type of impact he has in our culture. And I would even say globally. So I think this had people look at themselves and say, okay, why did he say that, right? You know, and there's cards that are played right away. All right, he's mentally ill, he's this, that. But again, the few that think back, I feel like have a kind of breakthrough moment that says, okay, what could this mean? Although I might not agree with everything Kanye posts, and I think that's fine, right? The goal is not agreeance, it's just free thought. But I think as long as it has you questioning and moving in the direction where you're thinking for yourself, I think so many barriers could be broken. And what I call is like what you said is it's really like the silent majority, right? So it's like a group of people out there who, like you mentioned, I think earlier, who are afraid to speak, who are afraid, you know? And I know how that feels, you know? But everybody around you thinks one way and you thinking the opposite, it's like, you know, it's looked down upon rather than trying to be investigative around it to see why does he think like that? Let's ask some questions. But it goes straight to the, man, why do you think like that, you know? So I feel like he gave voice and a sense of courage to what I like to call the silent majority, right? Which in a sense has been shut down slowly by our society and our culture, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that's why that was so impactful when I think about that moment when it happened.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what comes to mind.
Yes, it was very powerful. And, you know, I believe when we had Glenda Jackson joined me a couple of weeks ago, and I spoke about, you know, all of that was happening, what you just shared. When I first saw Candace Owens, for me, she was a breath of fresh air, because everything that this young woman was saying is what I had lived as that Black American woman, but was afraid to say, right? In some environments, I was comfortable in being who I was and what I believed. But in others, and it's really sad to say, but when I was around my people, that's right, I had to be afraid. I had to walk on eggshells when I say afraid of my of speaking my thoughts, of speaking my truth. And like you said, when Kanye came out and said, hey, I like the way she thinks, it shifted. I mean, there's actually a conversation that is occurring.
Exactly.
You and I are having a conversation. And,
exactly.
and it's about free thought. We may not all agree. We may not agree on politics. We may not agree on religion. We may not agree on the social climate at the time, but we can have a conversation without being emotional.
For so long,
and screaming.
That's been
for us, Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So is there anything else you want to add to that, Louis, or else I'm going to jump into the piece that you wrote? Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I was going to say really quick, and I think what's scary and what's about this is you mentioned you're afraid around your own people, you know? So I think that adds another layer where you get to clearly see the manipulation that's going on, right? So that's kind of evidence behind. It's not just being afraid, but, man, what hurts so much about this is, as minority, whether it's Black, Hispanic, as anyone who lives in a certain community, as far as you're convinced that you have to believe in these doctrines, vote a certain way and all that. What's scary about it, it's not just strangers, you know, around you putting the pressure to think one way. It's people you might love, you know. So that's what makes this very difficult, because within that comes a way that you move in fear rather than love, you know. So it's like now you can't be who you are. And you're forced to move in fear and you caring what other people say to you. So you never really come to grips with who you are. And then you realize the awakening for me was, like I mentioned, through my Christian faith, rippling down to, like, man, I can be who I am. Like, I have questions. I have some thoughts. And let me look into this myself. And that's when it opens up a can of worms, you know, that shows you, like, man, it's not everything is what we're told. It's the easiest way to put that. So you mentioning that just made me think about, man, that's amazing and not all in a good way, that they can manipulate a certain group of people to think a certain way and really be unaware of it, right? It's a difference if you're aware of it, but being unaware of it, you just live life as if those are your thoughts, let's say, right? Which is why I resonated when Kanye mentioned about the mental slavery, right? And certain few things they took out of context and what he said. But the point is, there's a sense of mental slavery that goes beyond that. That it's the biggest form, I believe, of oppression, right? Because if you have somebody mentally in chains, whether that be a slave, whether that be you can literally leave that person. And there's no need to rebel because he's mentally entrapped, you know, saying he enslaved himself kind of mentality, you know. So that's why I think that's so powerful what you mentioned, too, because it's literally a mental breakdown. And when you're not thinking for yourself, someone is, you know.
Someone else is. That's right. And it's been decades and decades of programming, I can remember watching. This is when I was now on the east, on the West Coast. I left East Coast in the 70s. So now I'm watching the news, Louis, and every report of a crime, everything negative, they would say, if it had been committed, by a black male, they would always be sure to say black male. This crime was committed by a black male. But yet in that same newscasting, they would have a crime committed by a white male, but his race was never mentioned. And, you know, we talk about the media. This has been decades and decades and decades of this. And like you said, we ourselves have bought into the programming that we have to think alike. I mean, and you talk about your journey, you know, my journey has taken me through many avenues. And so even in religion, this is where I find myself on the outside. I am a Christian in my belief, but I study in different areas. So if I don't speak the same way as others, then I am ostracized because I don't follow that path. So when we open our conversation and say, this is my journey, this is my truth, and I have the right to speak that truth, I have the right to share that truth, I think something, that's why we talk about the awakening, right? This is such an amazing time. It's so exciting to be alive and see what's happening. When you write, your writing is amazing. You remind me of A Quiet Storm. There used to be a radio show that came on. I don't know if it's still there, Louis. Is he still on? He used to say, it's The Quiet Storm. And you remind me of that. There's a quiet strength in you. And that is the reason I wanted to have you on the show. When I went back and read some of your pieces from your website, and you're going to talk to us about that a little bit later, there's a very, very powerful man on the other side of this conversation we're having today. And you wrote a piece, I'm a Racist. You might be one too. So you say all minorities in America must subscribe to a list of beliefs pressed on by means of repetition and emotional guilt. And you kind of spoke about that a little bit. Can you give us a little more detail into that? Talk about that a little bit more from your piece.
Yeah. So you mentioned this is going on for decades, you know. So just going off that, it just sheds light into what I say. Repetition, emotional guilt. Like I'm just thinking of the many different creative ways that I would say people, influencers in our culture, the media, and people who have power. When I say power, at least power in a sense to share truth, to shed a light, to really have people thinking independently rather than the what we call identity politics or group thinking, like. And one of the biggest ones going back to, I believe it is media, right? Because media's responsibility is to report, not what they think or what they want it to be, just to report the truth as it is, right? And I feel like we see a lot of manipulation in that. And what happens that's the media through repetition, right? Jumping on situations that only benefit their narrative. And then what happens after that? Celebrities come and jump on the bandwagon, right? And then how many fans do celebrities have that impact culture in a certain way, right? And then it's like a ripple effect of like, oh, wow, this is the truth, right? You have no need to research because your favorite celebrity believes that. The media keeps repeating it, and they paint a narrative that's false, right? So that's like the repetition side of it because everywhere you turn, there's a certain narrative fed to you, whether that's speaking on what's happening in our culture with police, you know, it has to be a white police shooting a black
right.
man. And these are all issues that I believe we shouldn't ignore, and I believe there are some injustices that happen
yes.
In that. But why do they only paint it one way? Because it's beneficial for their narrative. It's beneficial
yes.
for the manipulation of the mind, of getting the votes they need, of getting the, you know, so it's like, and it's a little frustrating even just speaking about it now, because I'm like, wow, it's just a fresh reminder because the manipulation is real. It's not just, hey, let me see where this goes. Like, this is strategic. I'm convinced that this is strategic repetition and to nail into our minds that this is a reality. And the less we question, the more we see, we blindly believe.
Yes.
You know, and yeah. And then the emotional guilt part of it, it's yeah, so that's a little more raw because that's definitely people like I think of like R. Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, there's people who I feel like, which is the saddest part of it, just really take advantage and capitalize on tragedy, right? Like they make a business out of really capitalizing on emotional guilt because yes, I'm not saying we shouldn't be sad, right? I think one person dying at Ed's police is one too many. But the point is we only cover certain ones, only paint in a certain way, and then these people come in and take advantage of that to keep people thinking of these things, to keep people trapped by these ideas, to keep the culture alive, right? Because I feel it's more of a cultural problem when I look at a minority culture. It's not more of a, I can't, there's no evidence behind it being a race problem or a thing or something else. It's really a cultural problem, right?
Yes.
Which any race can fall into. But we've been fed a culture that's unhealthy and not conducive to a healthy society.
That's right. And that is so good. You said so many things in there. I know No, please.
Mm-hmm.
You're free on my show, okay? You are absolutely free
yes.
that. You know, when you're talking about, you said so much in there. Okay, so I wrote some notes as you were talking. You talk about the music. And I don't know about you, Lewis, but the music has been so angry. And
mm-hmm.
that's what when I look out and I see, you know, Antifa and Black Lives Matter and all these groups, there's so much anger. I know we had riots and demonstrations in the 60s and, you know, over Rodney King and Martin Luther King riots, but there seems to be, like you're talking about this emotional, you know, the emotional piece of all of this. And do you see that? Do you see more anger or when you're talking to young black men, is the anger for real or is that just something that the media is putting in our faces every day?
Yeah, that's such a good question because I think like the emotion, I don't want to say it's not real, but at the same time, because it's real doesn't mean it's validated, if that makes sense. So it's kind of like it's kind of like people are angry on autopilot as soon as something happens before knowing the heart behind it. Like, for example, you mentioned the civil rights movement, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I think of the civil rights movement, there were specific things that the black community was able to point to, right? As far as what happened now, it's more like an aimless kind of anger directed at the country or white people, which makes for little progress. But when you have a clear situation where literally people were beaten for crossing the street a certain way when you were being black, right? Which was an essence of true police brutality, right? I'm not saying there's no bad cops out there, but the bigger conversation is they paint with a broad brush. And then you have a duty to be angry because the media tells you. You have a duty to really step forward and talk on these talking points that have to do with blacks being oppressed with little evidence or with kind of little logic sometimes, you know? And, you know, people get offended when they hear that, but it's not that nothing exists. There are injustices. But we just are ready to either march at times, riot, or complain depending on how many other people are complaining. It's kind of like, oh, okay, right. I have to jump on this. Rather than, let me sit back, ask some questions. So you, when you said civil rights, it reminded me, there was clear things that they can point to, right? Now it's literally people having a hard time giving specific examples. And I think a big part of that reason is because now we have what? It's a systemic issue. It's America as a whole. And I'm like, that's not going, you're not going nowhere there, because it's like me getting in trouble. And instead of saying, hey, this is what happened, I was like, oh, I can't explain. It's everything. Everybody bothering me. I'm like, oh, you won't get progress like that. You won't see progress and move forward in a healthy way, because now it's really like, all right, what are you saying, right? So,
right.
Like, for example, and then for me, my heart is like, man, okay. And I think a lot of people's heart is whether white, black. That's why Martin Luther King, I always tell people, Martin Luther King marched with the flag, right, and a lot of his marches. And on top of that, he what he did is he put the lens on the Constitution. He really just held America accountable. He didn't sit around and say, I hate all these white people. He had white people marching. It's really rare in America that you'll see white people marching. Really rare. The reason is because there's a sense of hostility, not welcoming, it's a sense of like just being inclusive. I will go as far as to say with no purpose, which is what's sad about. I hate to say it like that, but that's the reality. It's not a lot of purpose behind what you're accomplishing. You know, so.
Yeah. We had a Brian Foley used to come on, good friend, and he was telling me about a demonstration down there in Detroit, and they were protesting in front of a pizzeria. And their slogan was, no justice, no pizza. And I said to him, no. And we did a show on it. He mentioned it on the show. And I, like you said, I said, no, that can't be true. And he says, yes, it is. This is true. Jeez. I saw it with my eyes. No justice, no pizza. This is the nonsense that is occurring today. And thank God that we are having this conversation, because it is a mob mentality. It's a collective, you know. We feel the collective energy of all this that's going on. And when I think about even in the music, two people I have in my head right now, and how that music is used to manipulate and to say things about, you know, the president and the country, negative things, and it's all really interesting. Now, you went on to say the same people who pride themselves on being tolerant and accepting are the first to tell me I'm a bigot for not thinking like them. This is what happens when truth is not the goal, when truth takes a back seat to your feelings, okay? And then you write, who convinced us that there is no importance in truth? So talk to me about that piece that you wrote there, and then tell us, what is your truth? What do you believe truth is today?
Yeah, I think that came from the heart of just looking around and hearing one thing, but then seeing the opposite from those same people. It's kind of like, okay, let's look at our culture, let's look at our society, and let's have the best ideas win, right? For the sake of everyone, right? So let's have everybody speak, and that's kind of this, I guess, what's preached. But then when you go out and actually ask a difficult question or challenge certain narratives, you're automatically put in a box that says you don't understand. I'm like, okay, you're right, I might not understand, but I'm challenging, do you understand? Because now let's have a conversation revolving around the truth as far as the reality, right? Let's say the reality before we get to the truth, but it's a reality that's going on. But instead of asking questions, we in a way become sheep. You know what I'm saying? We in a way become programmed like everyone else. Like I said earlier, like be angry when everyone's angry. And then if someone doesn't agree with that anger or challenges that emotion, they automatically label you and put you in a box because you're an odd one. Like, why don't you think like that? Well, because I have some questions behind what's happening. I just can't say yes to that without knowing, you know. And I feel like when I give the example of feelings and truth, I feel like a lot of it is what I mentioned earlier. I think people manipulating emotions. But then when that happens for so long, it's also people running on their emotions rather than logic, truth, and reality. Right, so when you run on emotions, I think you're more susceptible to ignorance. You're more susceptible to lies, you know, because I just have to trigger an emotion, right? I'm not able to sit down and have a conversation. It's kind of like when I think of love, right? When I think of love, despite of how I feel, it might be days that I might not feel like loving someone. It doesn't mean I don't love them, but, you know, because of the situations, I got to choose to love them, right? And this goes right into truth and what I think about that, right? And I feel like truth and love, right? I don't know if too many people would describe it like that, but it's a sense of truth and love are really connected, right? So I think the truth is so important because you cannot consistently lie to someone you truly love, even if it hurts them. You want to tell them the truth, right? Right.
Yes.
So when I think of truth, most importantly, like I mentioned a little earlier, steps down from my faith and my belief in Christ and that truth. But then truth is also relational that leads to love, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't expect to have a fruitful relationship with someone who's not speaking the truth, even when it hurts, and doesn't generally love you, right? Which is why I categorize also love as a choice, right?
Yeah.
Love, you have to decide to love someone. I'm not saying it's void of a feeling, right? I think love has to do also with feeling. But if you minimize it to a feeling, I think you take the essence of loving your enemies, for example, loving God. Yeah, you don't feel like doing these things all the time. But the way you stand out, you know, Martin Luther King would preach this all the time, is the way you stand out in these ways is really moving in a way that says, I'm going to decide to love this person.
That's right.
Right? So I think when I think of my truth, I'm automatically thinking of Christ and who he is, and I'm thinking of love and how that looks towards other people, right?
Yeah.
Because I feel like, you know, you don't just want to wear the name of I believe this. You want to live that out, you know? So my biggest duty is living it out, right? I think many people can say they're Christians. Many people can say they believe in something else. But I think my main duty is to live that out, to show Christ rather than tell you about Christ.
That's right. I love that. There's are you still there?
Yep, I'm still here. Mm-hmm.
Okay. There was kind of a lull in the monitoring it over here, and I thought, uh-oh. When you talk about that truth, there's a bishop that's out there, and he's a Christian, and the hate that is being spewed from this young man's mouth, when I see his page, when somebody tweets something out there and it's from him, I'm going, but Christ was nothing but love, so I'm not understanding how we are calling this person a racist, our president, when you haven't spent 5 minutes with him. And anyone who reads the paper or if you've ever been interviewed for anything knows how easy it is to take things out of context. And And so we have out there a message that, as far as I'm concerned, was never the truth because I, you know, like to take the time and vet out my candidates. And insensitive, yes. He's a New Yorker. I mean, not saying all New Yorkers are expensive, but New Yorkers, they just lay it out there on the line. And, you know, sometimes they're, like I said, not as sensitive as they should be. But it's amazing. I'd like to also add to that, if I may, Lewis, that truth is subjective. For instance, I've heard many people say, let's take the topic that there is a what's called white privilege. And some blacks would say, yes, there is, and other blacks would say, no, there isn't. And again, if you have not had that experience, right, how can we say this is truth or this is not truth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because my experience may be different from your experience, and of course, vice versa. So I think as we continue to have this conversation, that we should remember that we all have different perspectives. And, you know, I grew up in the South Bronx. However, the South Bronx wasn't the South Bronx of the 80s, okay? It was a mixed community. And, you know, about, I was about the age probably of 12 or 13, my parents were making too much money. We were living in the projects. We were making too much money. And so we had to move, you know, to the north side, you know, moving on up, right? And so then I lived in a mostly, it was some blacks and Puerto Ricans, but mostly Italians and Jewish. So that gave me another perspective. When I went to work in Manhattan, there was another perspective. That's why I say you're blessed to live there, because there's so much diversity in New York, you know, so that you can have a conversation with all people and any people. Let me move along. You bring up so many good points that I just want to talk about some of the stuff that you've hit on, but I know time is important, so I'm going to move ahead. And I'm going to ask you, if you had just one thing that you wanted the listeners to remember, what would that one thing be? What is it that your heart says the listeners need to know?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think when I think about, I guess, a lot of our conversations, the direction the country's moving, truth, love, courage, and these, you know, these words that I connect to the vision and stuff that I'm working on, I think one of the biggest things is we need to not be afraid to really step into who we are. You know, I think we all have what I like to call a hidden part of ourselves that we hide because of life circumstances. As we grow older, we are convinced that this is not maybe conducive with our culture, or we can't. It's kind of the lie that we can't be who we truly are. So we avoid, you know, certain, let's say, confrontations that could grow, certain difficulties. And I think a lot, because I think society programs, and this is beyond race, I think as a whole sometimes, programs us to think that we need to follow a certain set of rules, whether that be to be successful, to do, you know. And I feel like I'm realizing when it's something worth doing, it's never going to be easy. But I've had so many conversations with people who I believe are great thinkers, great innovators, great minds, but they the biggest obstacle is themselves, right? And that goes back to that mental slavery conversation, which why I'm so passionate about certain things that I speak about, because I think once you realize, like, man, I could do it, you know, even if it's hard, you know, because just because something isn't easy doesn't mean it isn't worth it, right? Something could be hard, and it's definitely worth it, you know. A lot of difficulties, a lot of victories come from those difficulties, you know. But, yeah, and I believe when I think of truth, love, and courage, just to reiterate some of what I said, I believe we need to come into who we are, and I feel like from there, if we earnestly seeking truth, right, and in my eyes, that's God, and then from there, things trickle down, and we're earnestly loving one another and living courageously, I feel like everybody's life will shift. Right, it'll go beyond kind of just a job, beyond just a duty. I think I can honestly say I think a lot of people's lives would be drastically changed and moved. But I think we a lot of times live out of fear, you know. And I put myself in that circle too, right? So this is not to say like I feel like slowly, right? I've been moving more courageously. Mm-hmm. I've been more bold in my convictions and truth. And
yes.
I've been moving to just, hey, it's one mission in life. We got to just love one another. You know, it's not going to be easy. I don't expect my journey to be easy in what I'm doing, right? I have no problem taking arrows for what I'm doing just because I'm that passionate about it. And I want people to realize some of this truth, love, and courage that I speak about. I want to embody that, right? So I have no problem taking these arrows. But I just hope as people are taking these arrows that, you know, people step up and be bold in their convictions. Like, for example, you mentioned, I think there's still room for conversation, although people might disagree, which is the heart of some of the stuff we're speaking about here. But our culture, society has told us otherwise, right? Because of my faith influence, and I might look at truth as more objective, you might look at it as more subjective. There's still room to figure out what that looks like.
That's right.
Rather than shutting down the conversation, right? Rather than moving in one direction. But I think we lost that art of just the conversation. And I feel
that's
like
right.
To gain that back, it's people living on truth, love, and courage.
That's right. Yeah, and think about that. When we hear the stories about universities, some of our most liberal universities, you know, I call it UZ Berkeley out there in California, where they are shouting people down because they don't have the same idea. And then they'll point a finger and say, yeah, right? You know, you're a Nazi, you're a Hitler. It's like, wait a minute, wait a minute. Do you understand that you're shutting down my free speech and my free thoughts? I have the right to speak. We don't have to agree. That's the most frightening thing that I see happening right now. That anyone, and you say this in your piece, anyone who disagrees with Black Lives Matter is a racist. Anyone who criticizes the feminist movement, you're a woman hater. Anyone who speaks against transgenderism, you're a transphobic. We got all these new names, right? Because, and that's what we're talking about. You know, I'm a racist. If I say, hey, no, I don't think, you know, we should be aborting babies, you know, anti-feminist. I have a good friend that I worked with for many years, and he's so discouraged. He said, Pamela, I'm a racist. And it's a white friend of mine. He says, I'm a racist. Every time I open my mouth, I'm shut down for being called a racist. And so this is a conversation that I'm so happy that you came on, and I'm going to let you talk about your company in a second, but I want to say this, that I want these conversations happening in the boardrooms. I don't want people to be afraid to go in Starbucks, afraid to ask for a black coffee that doesn't represent who I am. I don't believe it represents who you are. I don't want those who don't look like me to be afraid to speak. You know, how many of us voted? I voted for Trump this last time. Probably wouldn't have if it hadn't been for his opponent. But I did, and I'm glad I did, because he's shaking it up, which is what I believe we needed. But guess what? I'm afraid to put on my Make America Great hat. And I don't live in a black community. But it's still that liberal mindset that you're the enemy because you support him. And we have to have these conversations at the dinner table, at Thanksgiving. You know, we may have the one aunt, uncle sitting there that's a conservative, or he might be a libertarian, or maybe he's a Greenpeacer. I mean, we have to be allowed to let others speak. The freedom to speak, the freedom to think, the freedom to love, the freedom to be. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're telling us today. Have the freedom to be. So tell us a little bit about Upstream. What are you doing in that group?
Yeah, definitely. So Upstream started with just a vision of mine, and it really was just me sitting in my living room and just kept thinking of, like, man, I guess during that stage of, like, have different ideas, I'm afraid I feel like I can't speak about them, and I feel like I'm not the only one. And I kept thinking in a cycle of, like, man, what can bring people, how can I bring more people together and also share both truth and love others and kind of like bring all those, kind of what I mentioned earlier, core values of truth, love, and courage. And I feel like I had a lot of names on my mind. And then, you know, Upstream is one that I feel like God put in my heart because it's really, I think the process of doing all this is intentional and conscious attempt to go upstream, right? So that's like an analogy of when we have a current, when we have a river, right? It's moving one direction, right? But to go upstream, which is the slogan that I use for Upstream, is against the current. To go upstream, you got to go against the current, right? The current is usually maybe what everybody might tell you, right? And that's really difficult because as soon as you turn around, it's going to be more difficult to walk upstream, you know what I'm saying? It's a little more difficult. Yes. It's a little more strenuous. But I feel like it's necessary, right? So I want to just encourage people to, because as soon as you question something, you're turning around. You know, you're making those turns. As soon as you ask more questions, as soon as you have more conversations and kind of dig into what the truth is, I feel like you by nature are going upstream, you know? So I just kind of want to continue to share what that looks like and what that means and encourage people to realize, like, going upstream is something that's really necessary in our culture, right? So that's the main thing. And then, you know, our vision is really envisioning a world of objective truth, selfless love, inspiring everyone's decision, and that connects to my faith. And then the mission is really to inspire a generation that stands on truth, acts courageously, and loves others, you know. And then, so I'm doing a relaunch coming on in July. When I say relaunch, just kind of a campaign coming out. I have some hacks on the website, which is upstream.org with a 3. So UPSTR3AM, so upstream with a 3.org. And there you can see some of the posts, some of my writings, a section about me, a shop. And then coming up, you'll see more stuff. Through where I engage the most is through where we met, Pamela, which is Twitter. So my Twitter name is Lewis_Savory. So Lewis_Savory, you'll see a lot of my content there. So as I roll out different campaigns, ideas, and things that I'll be working on in the next few months, that's the easiest way to connect with me, Lewis_Savory. And then I think from there you'll see a lot more updates from me in the coming weeks. Yeah.
That is fabulous, Lewis. I'm going to add a link onto the show. And for those of you who are listening, you can click on that and go directly to Lewis's website, and I'll put your Twitter handle in there if you don't mind.
And yeah, perfect.
I just want to encourage you be encouraged to continue to do what you're doing, because when you talk about going upstream, Lewis, I've gone upstream all my life, and it's not easy, but it's possible. It is absolutely possible to achieve anything that you want to achieve. I believe in being persistent and being tenacious. And when they say no, you say yes. And when they say you can't, you say, yes, I can. I love nothing more than for someone to tell me I can't do something. I love Samsung's new commercial, right? When they tell you can't, you prove you can. So I just want to say this to you, and I don't usually do this, on the show. I don't think I've ever done this. There, I've already said there's a quietness in you. There is a power in you. When you speak, your words are there's a depth to your words. And
thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. And people are going to hear what you're saying. And it's in a quietness, and that is what we need right now. We don't need any more screaming, yelling, cursing, bashing. We need someone mm-hmm. who is articulate, who has a mind to think, and who can relate those conversations to others. This is others. This is just the beginning. And I know I'm going to see you on Twitter. Thank you so much for taking the time. And I pray blessing, many, many blessings in your life. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I appreciated the time here. So, yeah, all is all mine. So thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, Louis. Be blessed.
Have a good one. Take care.
You too. Thank you. And to the rest of the listeners, thank you for joining us for this conversation today. We started it a couple of weeks ago with Glenda Jackson. We don't all think alike. And don't you be discouraged out there. You speak your mind. Speak your truth. Do it in love, not in anger, not in hate. I also wanted to add that we do have angel messages today. The messages were miracles, meditation, ideas, and inspiration. And what that says to me, I just use angels to help encourage people who may not find it comfortable to go to God. So the angels assist us. And so they're saying, look, you have ideas and inspirations, things you are inspired to do. Meditate so you can hear the clear answers, so you can find the courage to do what you want to do, so that you will be confident in doing it. Meditate so you can get the answers for your ideas and inspiration, right? And then you will see your miracle. So meditation, ideas, and inspiration and miracles are our angel cards for today. You can get the full meaning at YucatanWellness.com. 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 So, to all of you, we love you. See you next week. Bye-bye.